Well, I have a shortened time this morning, and that's all right. This was so important. This is the first in our series on anxiety and depression. We have a lot of work to do together, and not enough time to do it, even in the 6 weeks that we have of this journey. I just want to get the ball rolling today. Why do we need to tackle this issue of mental health, of anxiety, depression? If you're here and able to listen, I think it will become apparent why this is important to share in our worship gatherings. But just some numbers. The National Institute for Mental Health says that 19% of adults in this country suffer from an anxiety disorder. That's 1 in 5 adults suffer from an anxiety disorder. An estimated 31% of adults in this country will at some time struggle with this. So it's right here in our midst. Let's say we have 200 adults in our church family. Not everybody's here every Sunday, we know that. Out of those 200, that means 40 of us would struggle with anxiety, right here in our midst. You're not alone if you struggle with anxiety. We're called to minister to one another. And we can't minister if we don't understand one another. And not only are we called to minister to each other, we're called to minister outside these walls. And so just multiply those percentages out in our neighborhood, out in our community. Just think about that. 1 in 5 people around us. To reach out, we must understand. So thinking about anxiety is challenging for many reasons. Anxiety, though, can be contagious, as Shalay mentioned to me this week. I'd like to think that we all surround ourselves with non-anxious people, but I'm a realist. I know we watch anxiety-driven news all the time. We interact electronically so that we can't see people's faces and their emotions. We're only dealing sometimes with things that stress us out and the way we interact. And when we do talk to others face-to-face, sometimes it's only to complain about the same things that disturb us. And if you've spent time with anxious people, you can pick it up. When Julie and I lived in Prague, we spent 7 years doing church work, mission work. And our team had some very dominant, anxious people on our team. It was a difficult environment to work in because of these couple of people who were so anxious. They really wanted everybody else to share their anxiety. And it worked, I guess. And not only was it stressful in that environment, we had 2 small kids who had been born to us there. Our life there exuded nervousness and stress, even though there were so many beautiful things we experienced about that. But some point in time toward the end of our stay there, my neck began to hurt. I had a stiff neck almost all the time. It just wouldn't go away. It hurt, my neck did. I didn't know what was wrong. Was I sleeping wrong? What was I doing? I went to a doctor and was fortunate enough to get sent to a physical therapist who began to talk to me about stress. Stress was causing my neck pain. Many of you know I'm a pain in the neck, but you didn't know I have had pain in the neck. And I was fortunate enough to have a PT who helped me learn to meditate, who taught me the benefits of breathing properly, just things that are so seemingly small. But when it comes to our entire beings, it doesn't take much to throw us off. Small things can cause great pain and discomfort. But here's the good news. Non-anxiety is also contagious. So that's kind of where we want to aim for as a church, as a people, is to become a non-anxious people who can make a huge impact on this world. Well, we need to think briefly about understanding disquieted souls. I have concern for your souls, and that's not exactly what you think it means when I say that. So put a pin in that thought, and we'll come back to it in just a couple of minutes. I've taken the name of this series from a book by Alan Cole Jr., Be Not Anxious, and you will have seen, hopefully, there's a book table in the foyer. I'm borrowing material not just from this, but from many other, several other books as well. There are great books, a couple still on the way, which we don't have this morning. There's a Max Lucado book, Anxious for Nothing. There's just some really good, helpful material on this, which I want you to have access to, and if you just go home and download it to your iPad or Kindle. I think sometimes we need to read more for the sake of understanding what we're going through. What are our souls, and why do we need to talk about our souls? Seems obvious, doesn't it? We have souls, we say. I'm going to, during this series, quote a number of historical figures, prominent figures, not to show you that I'm smart, but to demonstrate to you that this problem of anxiety flows deeply through Western culture and has for centuries. I want you to realize we're not alone in struggling with this issue. And if you struggle with anxiety, you're not alone. Soren Kierkegaard, the Danish preacher, and I wish I had time this morning, maybe I will at some point, to share his story. He was the poster child of anxiety. He fell in love as a young person, never got up the courage for whatever reason, felt like he shouldn't marry, didn't ask her hand, and lived the rest of his years. He died in his 40s, a tormented soul. He wandered the streets of Copenhagen. People knew Soren Kierkegaard as this tormented soul, but he was a great preacher and writer, and he spoke with such depth, but some of his depth comes from his own anxiety. And he described this anxiety as an inner strife, and you may want to follow along with the little paper that's here in the bulletin. It's short. We, again, don't have much time this morning. If you want to fill in those blanks, you'll see them on the screen. But he described this anxiety as an inner strife and disharmony. This is important to realize that what we're talking about here is not about stuff that's going on out here. The anxiety that we're describing is not about what's happening here in the world around us. It's about what happens inside our beings. It's a disharmony. It's inner strife, as Soren Kierkegaard describes it. So you need to understand that fear and anxiety are two different things. Fear centers on a particular identifiable danger. Fear is about something specific. I'm afraid of something. Even if it's irrational, even if it's illogical, even if your fear is wrong, it's still your fear. You're still afraid of it. Like fear of flying. Many people are afraid of flying. There are classes you can take to help you deal with that specific fear. Once you begin to understand that flying is actually the safest way to travel. I mean, absolutely. My kids were both here for Christmas. They're gone now. Jacob left yesterday morning. He was in Nashville by dinner time. It's unbelievable that you can go so far, so fast. And it's much safer for him to have flown there than to have tried to drive all the way across country. But some people are still afraid of flying. So the good thing about fears is that they can be addressed. If you have a fear of something and want to work through it, you can come to a trusted counselor. You can come to me. You can come to someone you respect in your life, hopefully who doesn't share your same fear. And they can help you begin to understand why your fear is not built upon reality. Help you work through that fear. That's helpful to know that fears can be dealt with specifically. But anxiety is more all-encompassing and lacks a specific discernible locus. Now, sometimes we use our words in ways that don't necessarily deal with the way that we might talk about them here. People will say, I'm anxious about my test tomorrow. What they really mean is, I'm afraid about my test tomorrow. But they'll use that language sometimes. But anxiety is not about one specific thing. It's something inside is not right. I'm feeling uneasy. I just don't feel good about whatever, about life. Something isn't right. And I think the concept of angst is helpful in defining anxiety. You know that word angst? It's an internal anguish or dread that has to do with who one is in relationship to others. It's that when I go into that place, I just feel weird. Why? I can't explain it. What are you afraid of? I don't know. There's something inside of me that just feels uneasy. It's a dread. It's anguish that I'm going through, and I can't put my finger on it. That's anxiety. And so our concern as people of God, my concern as a pastor, is for the relationship of the whole person to the immortal God. In the words of Jürgen Moltmann, who's still at 92 years old, is one of the most brilliant New Testament scholars. We're concerned about the whole person. And here's a problem we face in Western Christianity, is that we've divided the whole person. You see, your soul is not separate from your mind and body. Think of Genesis 2:7. God reached down into the dirt and formed this thing, this human. But it wasn't a human being yet. It was still dirt. Until what? Until God breathed the breath of life into that being. At that moment, this dirt didn't have a soul. It was a soul. It was a living being. It was a living soul. Without the breath of God, there is no life. It's not like you can say, here's the body and here's the soul. No. It's a whole person, a living soul. It's not like God made an envelope and put a letter in it. The dust is not an outer shell for a soul. It became a living soul. Western Christianity has mistakenly divided soul from body. And here's your $10 words that you can Google later or go on Wikipedia and find out more about these and really impress your friends this week. But thanks to the influences of Platonic idealism and Cartesian dualism, we've divided soul and body. And I don't have time to talk about what those two mean. So put a little pin by those and come back to them later. Maybe I'll come back to it at some point in time. But here's what we've said. Christians have said this. If your soul is good with God, nothing else matters. Wrong. What do you mean if your soul is right with God, nothing else matters? Well, if we think of soul as the whole person, right. But what people mean by that is that they don't care about the mental health, the physical health. They only care about the life insurance policy for the soul. I'll come back to this thought because it's important. So when I speak of caring for anxious souls like some of you, I'm not saying that you need to come here to church to get your soul right with God and then go to your mental health professional to get your mind right and then go to your doctor to get your body right. I'm saying we care about your whole being. We care about your whole health. I don't specialize. There's a lot of specialists in our world. I care about your whole being. And as a church, we too should care about people as living souls. Anxiety is nothing new. Confucius wrote about anxiety. Ovid and Seneca, the Greek and Roman historians, wrote about anxiety. The Old Testament prophets, had to have had anxiety disorders. I mean, read their works, like the words of Daniel here from Daniel 7:15. I, Daniel, was troubled by all I had seen, and my visions terrified me. Jesus paid special attention to anxiety. He said in Luke 12, "So don't be afraid, little flock, for it gives your Father great happiness to give you the kingdom." Or again, he said, "Therefore I tell you, don't be anxious. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing?" I want to close with two quotes. First, from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and the second from Psalm, the book of Psalms. Dietrich Bonhoeffer lived in an anxious age in Germany. He was one of the most popular preachers, had a radio program with a great following. And he was deeply troubled that so many people in anxious times were ignoring and endorsing horrible solutions. He lived during the time of Nazi Germany. And he believed that good people had to do something to stop what was happening. And it cost him his life. He was killed in the final days of the war, executed by the Nazi Reich. He wrote this: "It is not that God is the spectator and sharer of our present life, but rather that we are the reverent listeners and participants in God's action in sacred history, the history of Christ on the earth. And only in so much as we are there is God with us also today." This points to where we need to go with this series. As long as we have mistakenly been taught that everything that happens is about us and is about inviting God to come into my